Apple News turns investor attention to Chinese growth. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams, in for David Brancaccio. Many are taking Apple's downgraded revenue forecast, announced yesterday evening, as a warning about China. Apple said slowing growth there hit iPhone sales, and that has investors wondering what a slowdown in China might mean for the global economy, with some drawing comparisons to Japan of the 1980s and 90s. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. And Diane, you say a Chinese slowdown would look very different. Why is that?
Japan was much more isolated economy than China is today. China is now the second largest economy in the world, with tentacles in nearly every other developing and developed economy. So unlike Japan, if China implodes, it cannot be a contained issue. There will be contamination, there will be contagion. And that is something that our trade negotiators, who frankly hearken from the 1980s, they don't understand the complexity of the global supply chain and the ripple effects. There was a lot of sort of assumptions made that this was a repeat of the 1980s, and in fact, we've evolved dramatically, and in that evolution, we have much more intricacies and interconnectedness with China than we ever did with Japan.
But an economic slowdown in China is different than a collapse or China going down in general.
Well, one would think, but remember, the boom of China was the single largest driver of things like commodity prices and global growth for more than a decade. And now we're moving in reverse. So even a subtle shift to a slowdown, if it slows enough, China won't be able to service their own debt. It's the largest debt bubble we've ever seen in recorded history in such a short period of time, with no idea of how it's going to be worked out. So there are a lot of uncertainties, and that's what's left financial markets very volatile.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And the Department of Labor is working to fix its visa application website after it crashed on Tuesday, not because of the shutdown, but because a record number of businesses applied for H-2B visas, temporary worker permits. In just a few minutes, there were three times as many applications as there are visas. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra has more.
H-2B visas let companies hire workers from other countries for temporary seasonal jobs in industries like hospitality, landscaping, entertainment. So we're talking about line cooks and gardeners and amusement park workers. There is a cap on these visas, 33,000 every 6 months, and demand is growing because unemployment is low. And companies say they can't find Americans to do these jobs, at least not for what they're paying. Muzaffer Chishti is with the Migration Policy Institute.
The jobs are short-lived, they are seasonal, and that's not the high priority of many U.S. workers who are looking for more stable employment.
The Trump administration recently changed the visa application system. Now it tracks when you apply down to the millisecond. So when the website went up at midnight on January 1st, companies rushed to apply. Within 5 minutes, the site was malfunctioning. So the department took it down. It says it's working on a fix and that it'll give 24 hours notice before it's up again. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
In the years after the housing bubble burst, renting became more common in almost every major U.S. city. According to a recent study by Marketplace and APM Research Labs, that trend includes cities long thought of as affordable places to buy a house. Places like Cleveland, Ohio, home of Marketplace Hub at WCPN IdeaStream, and where Adrian Ma looked at what drove the rise of renting in that city and what it says about the region's economy.
Rachel and Mike Cornacione are in their early 30s. They just got married last year, and they're one of those couples who seems to complete each other's sentences a lot. Like, when I ask them to describe the place they rent just outside Cleveland.
It was a great first apartment for us.
It felt really big when we got here, and now...
It doesn't.
It feels like we're busting out of the place.
So, for the past several months, they've been furiously house hunting, hoping to find something in the $180,000 to $200,000 range.
you know, you go on your lunch break at work, you check Facebook, you check your personal email, we check realtor.com.
But with for sale properties in short supply and prices going up, they haven't had much luck.
It's incredibly frustrating.
Emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
So for now, the Cornaciones will keep renting, and they have lots of company. In the years after the mortgage crisis, U.S. Census data show the ratio of renters to owners in Cleveland went from about 50-50 to around 60-40. Joel Elvery is with the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. He says one reason for the shift...
There are a lot of people who wanted to move out of Cleveland but weren't able to sell their homes.
So they either rented them out or sold to investors who converted them to rentals, taking those homes off the market. Then there was the wave of foreclosures that hit when the housing bubble burst.
And foreclosure, almost by definition, is moving people from homeownership to rental.
And try getting a home loan with that on your credit report. Now, Elvery says the rise of renters in Cleveland has also been driven by growing poverty. Today, about a third of Cleveland residents live below the poverty line. That's up from a quarter of residents before the recession. Craig Helmstetter is with APM Research Labs. He says home ownership plays a role in economic stability.
Home ownership is one of the prime ways that American families have generated and held on to wealth.
So with fewer people owning, he says a widening wealth gap could get worse. In Cleveland, I'm Adrian Ma for Marketplace.
And in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.